Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 2, Bhagavan's medium-sized form is omnipotent and all-pervasive. Page 25. I create under his order, and Shiva destroys under his order. Holding his three energies, he protects the universe as Paramatma. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.632. Uddhriti, Srila Prabhupada. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudeva. And only by his different energies and expansions are different manifestations, both in the material and spiritual worlds, maintained. In the material world also, Lord Vasudeva is everything, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Vasudeva sarvamiti, everything is Vasudeva only. In the Vedic hymns also, the same Vasudeva is held to be supreme. It is in the Vedas, Vasudevat paro brahmana chanyorto sti tattvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudeva. And Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in the Bhagavad Gita 7.7. Matav paratanam nanyat, there is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So the conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalist, is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies the personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. So it's not that it's there, but we don't put much importance on it, so it's just a matter of wherever you're putting it, right? Some put it on the personal, some on the impersonal, and it could be any either way. But that's not how that's not the actual position. The position is that the Supreme Lord, as a person, he has his form, and that form being of medium size and that, but at the same time is simultaneously unlimited, and through his energies, he spreads everywhere. Right, so his completeness is in himself, that he as a person, he's complete, and that all the environment and everything about that is also him. Does that make sense? Because we're a person, but we're dependent upon then an environment to be situated in. Right? And we're not in control of that environment. You know, we try as much as we can. We make our house, we make our circle, you know, you have our car, we have our friends, and we have what we do and the places we go. You know, and we'll say, that's my world. Like, you know, I've created it. But it's outside of us. But for Krishna, he is all that. But at the same time, as the person, he can be separate from that. That's the uniqueness of him. So we can't compare him to us, who are just a singular energy. Right? We're just energy, so we can only act in a certain way, and we're dependent. So that we're dependent on all these things, we don't even think about it, because that's just a given. Right? Does that make sense? You want to buy something, you have to have money. It's just a given. So in the same way is that we're dependent as a given. So we don't talk about it. We talk about our independence in our dependent position. Does that make sense? But Krishna is actually independent because he is everything. But so that everything is the situation for him. Because the point is if we look at it, okay, let's say we have, a football field. Okay, it's a situation. Now, there's no people, right? No one's coming and playing there. Nothing's happening there. Is it complete? No? Yeah. So it's only complete when the people are there using it. So situations are secondary or supportive of people doing things, not the other way around. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise, yeah. So, Therefore, Krishna, as a person, he is also unlimited. That's his nature. That's what makes him God. He's the source of the energies. Because if there's energy, there must be energetic. That's just how it works. So the energetic's different from energy. It produces energy. And it's separate from energy. But at the same time, it's because it produces, it's non-different. Is that? Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that we'll say it's also everything, but then they won't accept the personal. It's not that it's a choice. It's just they're only accepting part of it. Does that make sense? It's like saying we have the water pot, but, you know, I don't want any water put in it. You know, because if you put water in it, a spot may get on the outside, and then, you know, it'll go black there, and I want to keep it nice and shiny. So it's all about the pot. So we just don't use water. It's not complete. Does that make sense? Yes.
As you know, in the Gita, in chapter 12, Krishna is giving the choice more or less to Arjuna.
Yes.
Personal or impersonal as well.
Yes. But it doesn't mean that they're equal. Because the Brahman's not the source of the person. The person's the source of the Brahman. Because once you get it the other way around, then you're taking the situation, just existence, as the actual thing. And so if that's all you have is you exist, that's not necessarily considered something very good. Oh, yeah, what about George? Yeah, he exists. You know, by the Mayavadi, whoa, he's the most elevated. You know. So, or like this, like, yeah. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that they only take it up to a particular place. They have some vague understanding of Bhagavan, but they don't understand beyond that. They think Paramatma and Bhagavan, after Brahman, is under the modes. The Brahman is transcendental, and the other two are not. But at the same time, is that if everything's Brahman, how is it there's an illusion that's separate from Brahman? That means there's two. It's there's a duality. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that it's an incomplete philosophy. Though it's a philosophy for people who consider themselves very intellectual. You know, because. If you're dealing with something that's not straightforward, then the taste is going to come in its speculative nature. There's so much speculation. You don't know what you're talking about, but you can speculate on it. It seems like you're doing a lot. Does that make sense? It's just like, let us say you have some hardcore managers. Really good, proven managers. They get together, there's something common they're going to work on. How much do they talk?
Minimum.
How much it is to figure out what has to be done, who can do it, what's the most efficient way. And then everybody goes on their way to accomplish it. What if you have a meeting with a room full of non-managers? They can't leave the room and do something, so the only thing to prove that they've done something is they're talking. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that when you have nothing, all you can do is talk. So all these other philosophies, they become very speculative because they have nothing. The scholars, they have nothing. They know so many facts and figures, but that doesn't mean they know what to do with it. So that's the whole thing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, yes.
Another difficulty seems to be, which pushes people into Mayavad or karma, is that our perception of the Lord, He's the cause and He's the effect.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't give us any space, basically.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that all philosophies other than Vaishnavism, they comfortably fall within impersonalism, because personalism, it means basically anything goes. Because if Brahman is everything and we're God, then what's the limitation?
The sky is the limit.
Yes, the sky is the limit. Right? So exactly what you're saying is people are more comfortable with it because they can still feel they're the controller and enjoyer. even if they can't control and enjoy. They can at least speculate how, you know, I can't control and enjoy. I don't have money. I can't enjoy. Whatever relationships are there driving me crazy and everything, but I can be God. And so in that way, okay, now I feel good about myself. But yes, so it's like that. So that's why nirvise shunyavadi. It's all impersonalism and voidism. You know, just every last drop of it. And the more modern it is, the more it's like that. You know, it has less and less form. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like on the stock market, it's happened in the past. People make stocks out of somebody, and it has nothing to do with the person. You know, it's just like if I decide to do stocks on a particular celebrity that, you know, people know. And so I put up, these stocks cost this much. And because, you know, they're kind of in the news and everything, and people, you know, are favorable, they buy the stocks. It's based on nothing. So as long as people are willing to be involved, it happens. So they just create, you know, something out of nothing.
Also this new digital money, bitcoins and all.
Yeah, bitcoins, like this, all these things, you know, it's like, loans and mortgages and all these things, they're all just based on nothing. It's just that people are willing to take part. That's all. That's the whole thing. People have faith in the market, they take part. They don't have faith, they just keep their money at home. And the market crashes. And if they have faith, then they put their money. It has nothing to do with reality. You know, it's just like if you have something real, why would it crash? I have a go-down of rice. Nobody's interested in buying it. I still have a go-down of rice. And you know, ourselves and our family can eat for the next 10 years. You know, if not more. And invite friends over. You know what I'm saying? So how can it crash unless it's nothing? It's just the perceived value of it. You know, it's like an auction. You bring something out, it's not worth that much, but people auction over because they want it. And then they'll fight over it until a very high price. But not that you can sell it again for that price. So it's only if there's a value. It's all projected. Does that make sense? So ultimately you can say that about anything. You know, even you take gold or rice, so what's the values? Because we put that value to it, because it'll do nothing for the soul. But the point is at least that's within the laws of nature. So nature is governed that way. Even though it may be illusory, it's still governed according to Krishna's laws. So it does function in that capacity. Right? Because ultimately it's the Lord and His energies. Is that? Yeah. So that's the whole point. The Lord is there. He's the basis as the person. He expands his energies, you know, as individuals and all that. But at the same time, as everybody has the personal and impersonal aspect. You know, it's just like the man's there, his house. It's him, but at the same time, it's not him. It's the expansion of his energy. He's put in the effort that he has the money. He buys a house. He sets it up the way he likes. Is that... Yes.
Mayavadis also, they cleverly shift position. The discussion might be in absolute, mm-hmm. then they shift it into relative, and mm-hmm. then they bring it back. And then people confuse, they don't understand. So by mixing those ingredients, they come to a conclusion which is, as I said, vague. And then everybody thinks, yeah, but it's just a combination of things. So they're cleverly just combining things. But if you stick to one point, let's discuss absolute or let's discuss relativity, then they can do it.
Yes, actually. Yes. Like you see, Prabhupada would use that very much as a platform of discussion. When you had somebody who wasn't like discussing it on a level of actual value. You know, Prabhupada makes a point, they have this, they have a doubt, they bring up like that. Then you just continue your regular discussion. But if they're trying to present their own philosophy opposed to it, then you just, you know, pick whatever point, you know, that they're dealing with in that and just go after that one point. Don't let them go from that point. And then you'll see it just evaporates. Mm. Yeah. So we give an example because it connects to the people's experiences. But then, like you're saying, then very cleverly they make that experience into the absolute. You know, the Brahmananda. You know, I'm happy here. I want to be happy, but I can't be happy here, but I want to be happy, so therefore there's Brahmananda. But Brahmananda is removal of pain, so it can only be the removal of the pain in the material world. And so if it's a material happiness, everything here is limited. So I do something, and then I'm not happy anymore. Right? I have to do something else. So therefore, if I get rid of all of those things, and then you just have that nothingness, there'll be some happiness from getting rid of all the things that cause trouble. But after a while, you get conditioned to that. And then it's no more special. So it's still, like you say, they just project the... They talk that, people don't understand, they bring it down, then when they catch their attention, then they shoot that up into, as if that's absolute. Yeah, very, very good. So, yeah. So, as Prabhupada would show, the trick is you catch them on either one of that and argue it down. You know, it's just like, how you say? You know, dogs running down something, or lions just running it down. You know, they pick a gazelle and just go after it until it can't run anymore. That's all. You know, and they get really upset because you're restricting their mind and they want their mind to be free. They get really, really upset. Yeah. Okay. So it's interesting.
Everything is a question of value. If we have value if we have faith in Krishna as a person, or if we have some doubt,
yes.
If there is some doubt, automatically there is a speculation.
Yes, and yes, yes.
Automatically there is a, you know, we need to fill the gap, you know, to
yes.
Give some answer.
Yes.
Because to say I don't know, it's not very popular.
No, yeah, no, people don't like when you say you don't know. They mean, honest people will take you as honest.
Yes.
But dishonest people won't like it. You know, because they always want to present themselves as if they're perfect.
Yes.
So that's why then you stick to one particular system. Right? It means when you cultivate, it has to cultivate one thing. Like, let's say if we want to make cheese, you have to put the particular culture that makes that particular cheese.
Yes.
You can't just put as many as you want in there. Well, mozzarella is good, and you know some cheddar is good, and goat is really nice, and that, and then we'll throw the, you know, it doesn't work like that. You want something, you have to follow the path for that. You know, it's just like that in anything. If you want food, you have to follow the path of cooking. You can't go out and work on your carburetor or something. It's not that when you finish working on the carburetor, then you know lunch will be there. No. No.
If the wife is in the kitchen.
Yeah, then it'll work. Then the working on the carburetor. Then you feel you're doing something, right? Yeah, so now the car is okay. Now you can go buy more vegetables, right? You know, so. So that's the whole point of not reading too many books. Because the problem in reading too many books is that we can get confused. Right? So you only read as many books as you won't get confused. Does that make sense? So by reading Prabhupada's books, you won't get confused. Then if he gives recommendations of books of the Acharyas, if you can read those along with Prabhupada's and not get confused, then you read them. But if you get confused, don't read them. You know, it's just like digestion. Prabhupada says, indigestion or overeating, because overeating causes indigestion, right? So if you cannot digest one chapati is overeating, right? So we take it as a certain volume. No, it's whatever you can digest. Like for Bhima, how much is overeating? Yeah, you know, there isn't any such thing. It's how much food you have. You know, it's like that one I told you, that one brahmachari would sit there in the Calcutta temple. We you know, he'd sit down with everybody, you know, they'd eat. And, you know, some go, you know, some are a little later. And so when he's the last one left, then the servers will sit down. And he'll continue eating with them so they can serve him. Right? And when they're finished and that, and they start picking up the buckets as they're going, they'll, as they walk by him, they'll ask him if he wants any more. And it's kind of like, with him, it's kind of like, you know, if you don't mind taking the time to stop and you know, while you're taking it out of here to serve me more, I'll be happy. And so for him, it was just how much he could get. That was it. Once the buckets went, then, you know, that was
skinny.
It.
Skinny?
Hmm? Skinny Indian brahmachari? Yeah, he was a bit tall, but not super skinny, not one of those. He was kind of like a medium, you know, just slender. Probably had a ridiculous metabolism or something. But. And the fun part is he wasn't actually a very active person. That was also, you know, a lot of times those skinny ones are really super active and all that, and they eat, you know, lots. And yeah, so the idea being that we have to understand what's our capacity, you know. So this the modern idea that, yes, you're going to write your 300-page paper, and you have to have at least 500 references that you got from to be, you know, considered solid. But that means is it'll just be speculation. Because putting 500 different opinions together into one paper, there's going to be confusion. Right? So that's the whole point as it makes, is we saw before it was made, I think, was it Rupa Goswami or was it in here? It was talking about doubt arises when you read too many, from too many different scholars.
Oh, that's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary.
Oh, that was his, okay. Does that make sense? So that's a point. So if you can't digest it, don't read it. You know, you can say, no, I can read. So yeah, it's just like eating. Yeah, you could eat it, but you'll get sick. So doubt comes up because we're dealing with different things. The faith is not strong enough. So we're dealing in the one, let's say here, Krishna consciousness, but there's so many other opinions, and so we value opinions.
Yes.
You know? And why are we valuing opinions? Because they have to agree with us. So there has to be something there that we doubt. And so here's somebody's coming up and then supporting that doubt, and so then that resonates and all that. Otherwise, then if you've committed yourself and the doubt comes up, who cares? You know what I'm saying?
Better to follow Krishna's opinion.
Yes, yes, yes.
But this is very present, this mentality about value our some opinion we like, our opinion first.
Yes, yes.
And to find people that have, for some time, they are in accordance with our opinion.
Yes, yes. At least at the important moments.
Yes, yes.
And at least if the two or three in the group, at least one other person agrees with you, then you can be strong. If they all don't agree with you and agree with each other, that's a problem.
Yes.
Then you need new friends.
Yes.
Yes, so that's the point. It's personal, but at the same time, we have to see that we're not dealing, that our own subjectivity is not the prominent. Because the problem is our subjectivity is based on our conditioning. We're not dealing our subjectivity based on the soul. That's the problem. If we base it on the soul, then the soul has transcendental soul, then has to function in the transcendental platform. That transcendental platform is Krishna and is coming from Krishna. So if it is Krishna, it's coming from Krishna. Now, okay, the situation I'm in comes from Krishna, right? Then within that situation, I can perform activities. But the elements of performance of activities are part of that field, and that the ability for those elements to perform something, to generate something else, a result, that's also potencies coming from Krishna. Then even I get the result, unless I can get happiness from it, what's the point? So it's not getting a result, it's getting happiness from the result. Because people just say, no, if you get money, you'll be happy. But point is no, that money has to generate happiness. So that means, and happiness comes from here, because he's Sat, he's Chit, and Ananda. So that means Ananda, whatever happiness we're looking for, it actually comes from him, not us. We're Sat, Chit, Ananda, but on our own, it's not enough. It's not dynamic. Because we're a limited amount of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Krishna's unlimited. So that means the point is we, in contact of him, then you taste that unlimited. Does that make sense? So then one, being subjective in this way, one can see that without surrendering to Krishna, you're not going to be happy. But it has to be on the platform of the soul. But if we use our conditioning and therefore apply the subjectivity, then it's improper. So though you can see as anybody who's not a transcendentalist, then whatever their opinion is, it is subjective. You know, the modern academies say we're being objective. No, that's their subjective opinion, that they're being objective. They've all agreed, yeah, we're being objective. You know, it's just like guys sitting around, aren't we great guys? Yeah, we're great guys, we're fabulous. Everybody else thinks they're jerks. But they've decided they're great.
Yes.
So, yes.
Another problem seems to be with the modern approach to life in general is that they think that happiness and pleasure are the same. Hmm. But actually, if we think about it, that pleasure is generated by chemicals.
Mm, yes, yes. Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
It, you know, they all explain it. I don't know if the terminology,
yeah.
But pleasure, it's actually, it comes from external world.
Right, right.
But happiness is generated from within.
Right.
It's an inner feeling.
Okay.
So they say it equals. That's why, you know, advertisement and buy more stuff, be happy. But
right.
Actually, it's a matter of understanding what is pleasure as such,
mm-hmm.
or sensual pleasure,
yes, yes,
and what is happiness as it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because happiness is generated from, you know, connection with God, connection with Supreme.
Mm-hmm. That's why we'll in there call that Ananda.
Yes.
Bliss, because then you have bliss and happiness. So you have Ananda and Sukha.
Right.
And it makes it much more clear.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the happiness is, because the happiness comes, there's the aspect of that you've removed an obstacle, but that happiness, is, as you said, is generated from then certain, what do you call it? You know, chemicals in the body. You know, I think the popular one nowadays is what? Dopamine.
Dopamine?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
There's this, and there's another one. I forgot the name, but anyway, it's a whole theory. Like, it's really big.
Yeah, yeah. And the fun part is they're just looking at the mechanics of that. We can explain it so simply, but for that they won't be satisfied because they need to have this whole manual on it, you know?
Yeah. It's so, not even pleasure. It's anticipating the pleasure.
Yeah.
This is where the whole action apparently happens.
Yeah, because it's there, but there's that moment. But that's why you say it's only a moment, and then it moves into the past. So it's, yeah. So they'll, by observation, they can see all these things. But it doesn't mean that they can understand beyond that. You know, that's why you get the examples are given that the, you know, the great mathematicians and scholars of the world may be able to count all the grains of dust in the universe or all the stars in the sky or like this, but they won't be able to understand the Lord. So that's the weakness is, by the modes, it may be allowed that then they think in these ways. But unless we bring that to Krishna consciousness. So the point is, when they come up with these, now it's our opportunity to convince them of Krishna consciousness. Not that when they come up with this, oh, that proves Krishna consciousness for us. We should already be convinced. It should be now, with that, we can take them on and take it further and just show that, like you said, it's chemicals, it's this, it's that, and so what's the real thing? Because why would you anticipate something that you don't have a nature for? You know. So that means that must be inherent in the living entity. And it, since it comes from outside, then where is it coming from outside that's eternal? Right? Here it's temporary. So where is that place where it's eternal? Because we're expecting eternal. Every living entity is looking for eternal. So. Yes.
They have encountered another problem just recently. It seems they became aware of this happiness problem. Is that even when they happen to have good experience, senses touching a sense object.
Okay.
Then the result of this is that the expectation for the next encounter rises up, and as we would say, the prayojana moves back to the sambandha.
Yes.
Field.
Yes.
And then when the next moment comes, then the experience is much less because it's the nature of the material world, and they're aware of it.
Everything gets less. Yeah.
And it actually contributes to the depression because they just got something and they hope for the next thing to happen again, but it doesn't ever happen.
So yeah.
The so-called happiness actually brings them down to depression.
Yeah. The pursuit of happiness ends in depression. Well, that's why then the next thing is they become impersonalists. The jnanis have come to that point, so they've rejected karma can make you happy, so then they want to get rid of everything. You know? And then when that didn't work, then you come back to, well, it's not so bad.
Well, Svatram Maharaj was saying that this is the difference between modernism and postmodernism. The modernism, they say the goal is sense enjoyment.
Okay. And postmodernism is
there, there is not even sense enjoyment will give you happiness. Nothing will give you anything. You just
Okay. So then the karmis, then the jnanis, and then the postmodern, then they're the Buddhists. Okay, but that's interesting. That simplifies it, makes it very.
That's why they have new work coming every year in the dictionaries, and the new word for this year, for last year, was post-truth.
Post-truth. And this year they haven't come up with their word yet. Post-truth. And when was truth?
I guess
that went out with that ended, you know, after the cup of hemlock, right? In the Western, you know, theater, right? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudeva is one without a second, but because he is all-powerful, he can expand himself as well as display his omnipotencies. So he can expand and still display. It's not that he expands and then he becomes that. You know, he expands and he can he's still in his position. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies, Tri, Shakti, Dirik. So creation, maintenance, and destruction. So primarily his three energies are internal, marginal, and external. This external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is also displayed in three spiritual modes, Samvit, Sandini, Hladini. The marginal potency, or the living entities, is also spiritual, Prakritim, Vidime, Param. But the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is Narasta Samya Atishaya. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So the living entities, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Vishnu, he maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. It's funny, is that we used to do that when you turn the car off. You know, you come to a stop, then you blip it, and then when you hit it, then you turn it off so that everything goes out. Like that. And then when you're warming it up, you let it just run slowly. You don't run it too fast. So, somehow or another.
In India,
everything's reversed, yes. Yes. No, okay. So living entities including... Okay. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Vishnu, he maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. So Krishna comes as Vishnu to maintain, because Brahma and Shiva can't, because maintenance means you have to supply. If I want to maintain somebody, I have to have the potency to maintain that. I have to have the money and the facilities. So Brahma can create, but he doesn't produce the material elements. Shiva can destroy, but the elements aren't his either. Right? So that those potencies come from him. So Vishnu comes, maintains, and oversees Brahma and Shiva. Right? Then it goes on. But still, Krishna can expand, and he's still separate from this. So he himself, in his medium-sized form, being the original person, he still expands and pervades everything so that all these can go on. Yes?
When we say about the medium form of Krishna, can we say that the size of that form is changing?
No, the point is this medium size means it's just the perfect, you know, human size for the environment he's in.
When he came 5,000 years ago, his size...
Is the medium size for then.
For then, it was, I think, 4 or 5 meters, no?
But that's, everybody's that big.
Yes, yes, at that time.
So, you know, it's just like, let us say, at the end of Kali Yuga, the medium size will be 3 feet tall.
Yes.
Right? You know, so 90 centimeters. Yes. So, you know, someone who's 1 meter is like, woo, he's a giant. Someone who's, you know, 80 centimeters is a midget, you know, like that. So it's that's the way it works, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so in other words, at the end of Kali Yuga, Napoleon would be only 80 centimeters tall. Like that, you know.
You adjust.
So that's the point, is for the pastimes, it's medium size. So that Prabhupada said, for us, that's 5'10". So Madhava, that's Krishna's natural size. That's the medium-sized form. So,
it's really a complete freedom for Krishna.
Yeah, it's just whatever. So if he's on Brahmaloka, then he'll be that size, but the medium size. In other words, he's not too tall and not too short. He's in the middle. It's perfect. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that there's that perfection. But the point is, for the medium size to be there, there has to be bigger size, has to be smaller size.
Yes.
You know, so you have everything. So Krishna being complete, therefore you have the living entities that are the smaller size. Like that. Is that?
Yes.
Yes. And then here's the nights that this and this, this is from the 2632 purport. Right. So then, this one where Prabhupada says the three modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, and then the three modes of the spiritual, Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. And so then you can see as each one comes from there. So Ladini will be goodness, Sandini will be ignorance, Samvit will be passion. You know, it means that's where the reflection is. It means not that Samvit is, it's just that they're the reflection of it. The goodness, passion, ignorance. Since Vishnu is also Bhagavan, Vishnu is not indicated by the word Eva in the same way as Brahma and Shiva. Actually, you exist as all these forms, and fools see them as different from you. So Vishnu is Krishna, but he's playing that role. So therefore, Krishna can and perform his pastimes in Braj, you know, with the gopis and that. And then as Vishnu, he takes care of the creation, maintenance, and destruction. Same time as Brahma and Shiva also, that potencies that they have, that's Krishna. The forms that they have are expanded from Krishna. You know, Brahma's is made out of the material energy. Shiva's made out of that own tattva, like this. And so like this, then it's all coming from Krishna. So it's all Krishna. But at the same time, is still everybody's an individual, because we'll take it. Oh, it's all Krishna means now it's all impersonal. It's all Krishna, it still remains personal, because Krishna is a person. Right? If Krishna is impersonal, it's just Brahman, then everything's just Brahman. Right?
Maharaj, you know, when the jiva came to the material world, his first position is Brahma.
Yes, first.
But so it means it is this Brahma that we see here. It is the same Brahma that here. Means when we say
Brahma is a position, it's a post.
Yes.
And then within that post, there'll be an individual, just like Indra is a post.
Yes.
So one day of Brahma, there's 14 Indras.
Yes.
So we talk about Indra, he does have a specific name,
yes.
But we're just talking about, because all these pastimes of Indra and that, you know, they're all at different times.
Yes.
Like someone was saying the other day about a particular pastime, the one Ramlila that is described. In Ramayana, this is the 28th cycle.
Yes.
That's from the 24th cycle.
Yes.
Right? Like that. So, like that. Yes. It's just wherever it is. So there'll always be. So Indra has a name. Like I think our Indra's name is Purandara, no?
Yes.
Like that. So in a day there'll be 14 of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is someone in that post, they tend to do these particular things. And so then you know, it matches. It's not strange. You know, because like the one who, in getting the 1,000 eyes, doing this, that, it doesn't mean it's the same Indra. You know, it might be, it might not be. Or it may be it's something regular that they all do. You know, it's just part of being Indra. You have to get 1,000 eyes. You know? You're not full Indra until you have 1,000 eyes. You know? Oh, hey, you know, the new Indra's here. You want a visa? How many eyes does he have? Only two. I'll wait a few weeks. Right, so those who are uninformed, they don't see how it's all Krishna. So that's the whole point, is we switch the vision that the personal is the main. That's why everything's personal. So the impersonal is taken that everything's impersonal. That's why then this personal must be given up. No, the personal doesn't have to be given up. You just have to see personal from the transcendental position. Then it makes sense while the personal on the temporary doesn't satisfy, because we're eternal and the Lord's eternal. And then you're only working with material nature. So temporary means the transformation of material energy. This body's material energy. The situations where you are in material energy. So those keep changing. That's temporary, so we won't be satisfied. Vritti. After establishing that the guna avatars are Lord Krishna's expansions, in the next anucheda, all the avatars are also delineated as his expansions. So now we've done the guna avatars, now we have all the other avatars, right? Because there's six kinds of avatars. Okay. Anucheda 39. Just as Krishna appears as guna avatars, he appears as other avatars. O Lord, O Supreme Creator, you have no material birth. Yet you defeat the false pride of the faithless demons and show mercy to your devotees. You take birth among the devatas, sages, human beings, animals, and even the aquatics. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-20. You have no birth. This means that what is called his birth is his manifesting himself only. Right? So he doesn't have to take birth through the medium of parents. He just appears. So that moment of appearance, we'll call that his birth. So that moment of appearance, we'll celebrate that.
Yes.
You know, that. Lord Krishna. O Brahma, you think that since I am a single, all-pervading form, it is impossible for me to be the locus that displays many forms. Right? So if you're thinking that he is an all-pervading, single, all-pervading form, how can he manifest singular forms? Right? Because then the problem is if you're using this mundane logic, you can do one or the other. How do you do both? Because if you could be impersonal and manifest personal forms, and they'll be transcendental, why couldn't you be personal and have the impersonal feature? You know, why does it have to start? Why would the impersonal be the source of the personal? Well, we see in our experience, the personal is the source of the impersonal, not the other way around. Yes.
Also, the aspect that siddhis attained by any common man will have only, if they're pervading in more than one form, all have to do the same kind of activity.
Yes, yes.
So this siddhi.
Okay. Then how can he do that? How can my spiritual forms, having a different nature, be like the appearance of material objects such as pots seen in the material world? You have been astonished by whatever powerful forms I have shown you. You seem to think that I cannot have other forms, that I am limited. Thus, when my expansions to the boys and calves and later the forearm forms appeared, you thought that such forms could never appear. So he was amazed. Because he goes, and because he takes these forms, then that's it. But the point is, then he can manifest all these, because they're him anyway. So Brahma takes them, he just manifests again. Udgariti. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. You thus appear in various places in various avatar forms, showing your true form to prevent your devotees from being defeated by these jnanis. To defeat the non-devotees, asatam, who think they are learned, and to show mercy to the devotees, satam, so that they can remember your spiritual blissful forms, qualities, and pastimes. You appear in different avatar forms, for it is said, O Lord, cause of all causes, if your transcendental body were not beyond the modes of material nature, one could not understand the difference between matter and transcendence. Only by your presence can one understand the transcendental nature of your lordship. Who are the controller of material nature? Your transcendental nature is very difficult to understand unless one is influenced by the presence of your transcendental form. 10:2:35. You need the stream SB. Yeah. Okay. So, because he's transcendental, therefore you can tell the difference between transcendence and mundane. If he wasn't, how do you tell the difference? That makes sense. Yeah, because if we're mundane, we're conditioned with using mundane, how can mundane perceive transcendental? So even for the impersonalist, how would they answer this? They have this idea that there's beyond. How are they perceiving that with the mundane elements? And if they say no, because it's from the platform of the soul, but according to their philosophy, the soul is produced by avidya, right? And then the Ishwara is produced from vidya, but both of those are illusion. So how would illusion be able to perceive transcendence, which is beyond? So they don't, you know, they can't establish these things. So that's the whole point, is when you think on that impersonal form, the Lord has that form and that's it, and then there's the impersonal, you can't see that, no, he's the source of everything. That's why he can expand and more. Vriti, after discussing how the various categories of incarnations are emanating from the Supreme Lord, the next Anucheta explains the reason for manifestation of this innumerable incarnations. Right, because if it's all him, why would he be doing this? That would be the question, right? Anucheta 40. Lord Krishna, all these forms can exist simultaneously because I have an eternal form of unlimited bliss. Right, so means there has to be a basis. There has to be something common. So from impersonal, from the Brahman, how are you going to get form? Because that's not its nature. It's all pervadingness is its nature, right? But that all, so form has to come from form. Right? So therefore, that means then for transcendental form to come, there must be transcendental form from which it's from. And so, from the impersonal, how do you get the personal? That's very difficult. As you see, as the great scholars can't understand that. But that the personal has the impersonal feature, that makes sense, because we see that all the time. Right? And so, therefore, transcendental form generates other transcendental forms, and also, because of that, can be expansive and unlimited. You know? In other words, that transcendental aspect is all-pervading. So it's coming from the person. The person is all-pervading. Otherwise, for Brahman just to be all-pervading, what's the need to be all-pervading? It would just be sitting there. But we see is it's always expanding unlimitedly. That means it must be coming from a particular locus. Right? A particular point. Yeah?
about a question about the universal form. This means different persons saw the universal form with different mind. Duryodhana, I think, he saw. No?
Yes.
But he saw with, you can say, material consciousness.
No, but Krishna can reveal himself. Just like when he performs his pastime, people are seeing them with the senses.
Yes.
It's just his will. That shows his independence. Means we cannot see the Lord with our senses, but the Lord by His will. That's because we're not independent. If we're independent, we'd be able to see the Lord or not as we pleased. And we're dependent upon Him, and then when He reveals Himself, we can see. Same with bhakti, because bhakti is coming from the Lord. It has the same independence. Therefore, bhakti can be perceived with the senses, even though it's transcendental. Does that make sense? So that's his nature. He can show like that. Therefore, we see when he walks into the arena, the wrestling arena in Mathura, then you have people there who are transcendental,
yes.
People who are not. Everybody can see him. They all have different opinions. All these forms can exist simultaneously because I have an eternal form of unlimited bliss. But you do not see all these forms at all times and all places. How can you see all the forms at once? So there's unlimited forms, how you'll see. You'll only see what you can see. Brahma replies, O unrestricted Lord, O Lord endowed with all powers, O Supersoul, O Lord spread throughout all time. Who knows where, how many, and when your pastimes will take place in the universe. Spreading yoga maya, you play. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.21 Uddriti, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. You are born as Krishna to relieve the burden of the universe. And you appear as Rama to kill Ravana. As the white, red, black, and sham avatars, you institute religion. The purpose is not to defeat the false jnanis. Actually, no one can fully understand where you will appear. The purpose, the time, the number of appearances that you will make. Unlimited Lord, cause of all causes. If your transcendental body were not beyond the modes of material nature, one could not understand the difference between matter and transcendence. Right? So just that he's beyond means that's why we have a capacity to appreciate that there's beyond material. Even though we're only working with material senses.
Yes.
Right? Because the soul being spirit, right? Being part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna being transcendental. That means there's a portion of that in the living entity.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Only by your presence can one understand the transcendental nature of your lordship, the controller of material nature. Your transcendental nature is very difficult to understand unless one is influenced by the presence of your transcendental form. O form spread throughout the universe, Bhuman. O Bhagavan, though you spread throughout matter, you are still full of your six opulences. Though you are full of all opulence, you also expand to witness everything as Paramatma. So he has all the opulences in that, and they're spread unlimitedly, and he expands his Paramatma then to be, to how you say, to witness everything. You know, how it's going, how the living entities are interacting, how the mechanics are functioning. O Yogeshwara, because of your yoga maya, you display such powers. Who can understand your pastimes, Uti? Performed throughout the three worlds, Trilokyam. Why, where, how, when? Your form is unlimited, spread throughout the universe, full of all opulences. It is not material, but everywhere in the three worlds. So the doubt, Shamshaya. How is it possible to satisfy simultaneously all the devotees at all times with pastimes? Uttara. This can happen because of yoga maya. By your inconceivable energy, yoga maya carries out the work of presenting various pastimes to various worshippers at the suitable time. Using your... So he's unlimited, his energy is unlimited, his yoga maya is unlimited. So therefore it can interact with each devotee in the situations and particular pastimes and that match each individual living entity. So, using your inconceivable chit shakti, yoga mayam, you play. Who knows where, how many, and when these pastimes, uti, will appear in the three worlds. No one knows. Yasyat matam, tasya matam, matam, yasya na veda sa. The Lord is known to the person who does not think the Lord is limited. He who thinks the Lord is limited does not know him. Kena Upanishad 2:3. That doesn't mean, because we're addressing a person. So that person is unlimited. That's the point. Because unlimited we understand, person we understand. The person is unlimited. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's then you know. How did Lord Brahma prove that Narayana is Amsha of Krishna? By addressing the Lord the four names, Bhuman, Bhagavan, Paratman, and Yogeshwara, related to his inconceivability, he gives four reasons for his powers. O form, which includes within it unlimited forms, Bhuman, the meaning is this. The one chief form of Bhagavan is simultaneously unlimitedly other forms. Thus, Akura said, Bahu, Murtyeka, Murtikam. Your one form has many forms. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:47. Shruti says, Ekam santam bahuda drishyamanam. The one form is seen as many. When worship matures to its fruits, at that time a person sees the Lord's forms according to the type of worship. So that also is that maybe you had the question about we're worshiping Krishna. How do we not end up in Vaikuntha because we're following Vaidhi, right? Because we take it Vaidhi means Vaikuntha. But here say, when worship matures to its fruits, at that time a person sees the Lord's forms according to the type of worship. So because we're worshiping Krishna, then when that method of worship matures, you'll see Krishna. Right? It's not that Vaidhi produces. It's the worship, who you're worshiping is what produces. Because otherwise, then we're saying that bhakti is dependent upon karma. If by following the Vaidhi, I won't get to the platform of Rag, right? Then the problem comes is then I'm saying Rag or Bhava is dependent upon rules and regulations when it's beyond, it's independent. Does that make sense? So because we're worshiping Krishna, we're worshiping Radha and Krishna. That's why you'll get to that point. One has that faith. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm trying to match with Srila Rupa Goswami. He mentions that sadhana defines sadhya.
Mm-hmm.
But also, as you explained, sadhya defines sadhana,
mm-hmm,
in the reverse order.
Yes.
So we have to understand both,
mm-hmm,
positions.
Yeah, because see, one mistake generally is made is that when we say raganuga, we think it's not sadhana, right?
Yeah.
It is. It's part of sadhana. So sadhana bhakti can be vaidhi or rag.
Right.
Now here's the next mistake: is that okay? If we say it's sadhana, then we think it's a different sadhana than vaidhi. It's exactly one. Sadhana bhakti is one thing. It's just a matter of whether the mood is I'm doing it because of the rules or I'm doing it because I want to please Krishna. That's the difference. So one's rag, one's that. Because we take it, rag means, oh, you have to know your form and be dancing with Krishna and Vrindavan. The sahajiyas say that. Our acharyas never say that. The maximum they've ever produced now, it means we're all the way through with Stai Bhava and everything like that. They've just, all they've mentioned, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, is that you follow in the footsteps of those devotees who you are inclined to that kind of worship. It's never said you do it yourself. It says you follow in the footsteps. Footsteps means not imitating. That I'm there dancing and doing, that's imitating. So in other words, there's a mood, there's an attitude of surrender. Does that make sense? So they've never said that. But we pick up from the sahajas, and that percolates in. Like, you know, like we pick up from the contemporary media and everything and things, and those values come in, or our own, whatever we had before, and you know what I'm saying? And then we try to apply that in Krishna consciousness. But we see is that they don't mention that. So we can see it's an attitude difference. The same activities are done, but therefore we'll only do how much is in support of. So that's why you see there might be a reduction in how much volume or what degree we're performing the vaidhi. If we're performing the vaidhi because we think the perfection is how well we're following the rules, rather than how much it is about Krishna. So if to do the service of Krishna, we don't need all that, we won't do all that. Does that make sense? If it's recommended, it's necessary, then we'll see that it fits in, but we'll see that it fits in within the context. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes. Also, Maharaj, that according to the type of worship, as you mentioned, the type of worship is what is given by the acharyas. Following that.
So yes, yes.
So because for us, the worship is already established by our acharyas, we need not even have that any kind of anxiety that whether by doing this worship, whether I'll get or not.
Yes.
Though we are imperfect because we are following.
Yeah, because we're following. So if you stick to that follow, then you'll get. But, you know, as we said, he said it's all based on desire. So the more you desire that braja bhakti and that mood, the quicker that develops. But that's the only sadhana, that's the only activity that you can do is desire. One can complain, but it's pointed out that's the only thing we have. We desire, and then either the external, the modes of nature carry it out, or the internal potency carries it out. Because it's Krishna's pastimes, so they take care of everything. He's the controller. We want to be the controller. But no, Krishna's already the controller. You want to take part in his pastimes, pastimes are already going on. So the Samkirtan pastimes, they're already going on. We want to take part, it's already going on. We just fit in. Like the bus is already going to Calcutta, we just have to get on. You know? Or we can get on the bus that's going to Mindapur. Yes.
So if we're not the cause and not the effect, so what is our position as jiva?
That's marginal. That's the point. We're in between. So we're the instrument between cause and effect.
But I was trying to describe to explain it to my students, but they couldn't figure it out.
It would just
either
be
this or that. They can't. It's just.
Just like this, like in cooking. You have the vegetables in the pot, you have the person cooking them. Right?
Yeah.
So, but what actually is moving the vegetables around in the pot?
The spoon.
The spoon. We're the spoon.
I'll try that.
Yeah, they might catch that. You know, especially that if nothing else, the babushkas will get it.
Yeah. Still cooking.
Yeah, because they're still cooking. They're like, what? What are you talking about? You know, or in the car, the steering wheel. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because that's the point is the steering wheel isn't driving the car. It's the person drives the car through the steering wheel. So the pastime is happening. We're taking part and being able to go on. So the cooking's going on. It's just that's being you. Because you can say, but without that you couldn't do it. Yeah, but you can change it. You can use a different spoon. You don't have to use that spoon. You know what I'm saying? And if push comes to shove, you can just take the pot by the handle and then going. Then it's the handle that's actually doing it. You know,
if Chinese cooking.
Yeah, if we get too proud, then, you know.
So I'm not sure if... the spoon is the analogy for the pastime?
No, the spoon is the analogy for the jiva taking part in the pastime. Krishna is cooking, and we can be the spoon. But we're not the cook. You know? So any dealing with the with the Lord's energies, that there's any manipulation, is still under the Lord's directions. So that what the Lord desires is, as God, He takes care of that. You know. But the point is as Bhagavan, then He's just enjoying that. So His energies take care. So we come in line with the Lord's energies. Does that make sense? So the internal potency, Yoga Maya, is arranging the pastimes. We can take part in that arrangement. But the Yoga Maya is pleasing Krishna. And because we're taking part in our connection to Krishna, we're naturally pleased. Because when the minute comes in contact with the unlimited, and the unlimited is happy, being part and parcel of that, we're happy. You know, just like you feed the stomach, the hand becomes happy. Does that make sense? So, you know, it's like if you have a basket of baguettes and you stick your hand in there and keep it in there all day, your hand will not be happy. You know, but if you eat them, then the hand is happy. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Swatram Maharaj wrote an article back in the day, Raganuga Niskam.
Huh?
So he was making the point that we practice Raganuga all the way through, because our intention is Raga. And we use Vaidhi because the Acharya is saying this, and also because this is the only way we can get to Raga. We cannot jump straight to Raga because this is Sahaja.
Yeah.
But actually we do follow from day one the Raga mark.
Yeah, that's fun.
And we will not end up in Vaikuntha because our intention is Krishna. No.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, very good. Yes. You had something?
Yeah, I had it in my mind. I didn't.
Really? You didn't put your hand up?
No.
Really? Because when I looked this way, I saw you raise your hand, and then
I
caught it because it was a. Okay.
I'm just thinking that there was no description of Yudhishthira Maharaj's way, how he ruled, or Prahlad Maharaj, or Ambarish Maharaj. The only emphasis was how they were
devotees.
King of Krishna.
Yeah. Because those details are given in Mahabharata and Manu and in Arthashastra and Niti Shastra. The details are already given there. But so that's already known, and people can know that. But what's not known is how all that connects to Krishna. That's what's the importance of these stories of how the great kings connected. You know, it's just like, so they'll show some little things. Like he saw that, like the Rajasuya sacrifice. That in that Rajasuya sacrifice, then you have to worship one personality as supreme. So he thought, then we can show how Krishna is supreme by worshiping him. Because they're going to invite everybody from all over the universe. Like that. So Brahma, Shiva, Indra, you know, all the great personalities were there, besides all the, you know, I say the, what do they call them? Bhu Ishwaras? Or Bhu means the kings of the earth, Bhupatis. Yeah, all the different, like that. You know, so they're all there. So you can see as how he's connecting it to Krishna, how he's seeing it in context of Krishna. Does that make sense? And so these kind of details are there. So they're going to use. You want to have everything. So what's the ultimate point? They'll be Krishna conscious. What's Duryodhana, if it's just a matter of pure, just management, then what's the problem if Duryodhana manages? Right? Because he won't be Krishna conscious. The people won't become Krishna conscious. His techniques and all that, though technically correct, won't carry the Krishna conscious aspect. There'll be no chit potency. Because otherwise, if we look at that, then wouldn't it be practical to hire a bona fide professional manager to run the temple? If management is what's going to make ISKCON great again, you know, wouldn't we want to hire a proper manager? You know, so you go find firms that have these, you know, put out the things, you know, like this, and then, you know, and they get one, and he'd manage the temple. What's the problem? their decisions won't be based on Krishna consciousness. They'll be based on management. Probably the place will have money. It'll be nice. A lot of people will come. But there's a good chance not very many people will be Krishna conscious. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the difficulty. So it's the Krishna consciousness that's the part that's unknown. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that in this world, nothing, there's no shortage of anything except Krishna consciousness. Everything's there. Maybe we don't have it, but it's not that it's not there. There's plenty of, you know, the Forbes magazine, they have Forbes 500. They just take the top 500 people. You know, as far as millionaires go, there's probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of them, or millions of them.
I was hearing what comes in the Forbes 500, the actual billionaires, trillionaires, they don't make it into it, because they prefer not to be in that.
Oh, because they don't, they're not on the list.
So those top 10 are much more, have much more wealth than this 500 put together.
The ones that are not in there. And then you have one of those sheikhs that has more than any of them all put together. Right. Yeah, that's far out. Does that make sense? So that's the importance of it. And then, so there'll be little key things. We have to look for that. If we're looking for all the technique, that's already given. It's mentioned. That's what Dharma Shastra, Artha Shastra, Niti Shastra is for. It explains all those things. And all that's explained. You see more example of that in Mahabharata. You know, more of the practical aspects. But still, the techniques and all that, I think, are given in these scriptures. But that's what's unique. So you even see, we even saw in one in sixth canto, is talking about one of the kings. I can't remember which one. It showed the example of his interaction with his wife. And this is also one of the kings who was a Paramahamsa. And just the little things there, from that you could catch the key, how it connects. Then all the details are mentioned in the Shastras. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the thing. The Acharyas are bringing up these points. Like in Varnashram, we're looking for, Prabhupada gives a lot of the details. But it's all there. But unless you catch the principles that Prabhupada's giving, you won't appreciate the details. You know? Because if you look at it, Mahabharata's a lot fatter than any of these self-help books. And a lot of the self-help books, they're just talking. You know, there's only a few techniques being given. But if you have no technique, one technique is more than you have, so you can write a book on it. You know? So that whole idea is that you have to catch from the, it's top down, it's descending. Unless you catch what the Bhagavatam's saying, you won't catch what's in Mahabharata, you won't catch what's in the Dharma Artha Niti Shastras. If you're trying to do the ascending process, you'll never get it. And even you go to the karmis, you'll still never get it. So unless by material karma you are a manager, you'll never learn management. That, end of discussion. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. You know? Just like if you can't carry a tune in a bucket, you will not become an opera singer. It's just not going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So the same way is that's just the way it is. It's just karma. And so that's the beauty of Varnashram, is everybody has a position. So you can be a total non-manager and still be the top leader in society. Because they limit it by saying you have to be the manager. And if that's the case, how many do we have in our society? How many real managers are there? Right? There are there, and if their real managers were doing the management, you'd find more. You know what I'm saying? You know, just like a Brahmin, if you're not going to deal with him properly and listen to what he says, he'd rather just not talk. He doesn't have to establish. He's independent. Same with the manager. Is if he can't manage, he'd rather sit under a rock. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. The Vaishya, he can't do business there. He'll go somewhere else and do business. He can't do it within the society. He'll start his own business. And the Shudra, he can't do that in the society. He'll do it outside. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, because of their nature, based on the Dharma and all that, they don't mind just going into the renounced modes. You know, Vanaprastha kind of mode. And just, you know, don't even bother. Get in to do some preaching, do this and that. It's more taste. You know, it's that they can do more and help, but if no one wants, hey, they're doing fine by, you know, running their, you know, the weekend program where they do this or that preaching. You know, they're fine. Does that make sense? So one has to know the nature you're dealing with. So it's already given. Just that one has to catch it from the top. Unless you catch Bhagavatam, you're not going to catch the rest of it. Okay. And even if you do catch other things without catching Bhagavatam, you won't be able to use it properly in the society. I've also seen big managers come in, they can't manage anything. Because they think it's by management it'll work, when it's not. It has nothing to do with that. You can engage your management, but you can't think the management is making bhakti happen. So, yes, sir?
I'm just thinking this confirms the idea that we're following Raga Mark.
Yes.
It's not possible to manage just on the ordinary level.
Yes.
He has its own energy.
Flow. Has its own energy. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, someone was saying, you know, it has to be a spiritual society because it's going on despite us. It has to be spiritual. There has to be someone else running it. Like that. So that's the thing. And we can take part. That's the thing. You know, as Prabhupada said, it will happen. The movement will go on. The preaching will go on. It's just who gets the credit. It's not that, oh, unless we do it, it won't happen. No, it will happen. And you want to take part, then you take part. And if you think that, no, I'm not taking part, someone else will do it.
And the Gita with Arjuna. Same like Gita with Arjuna.
Yes, very good. Everybody's already killed. Now Arjuna can take part, or he can go to the forest and someone else will kill them all. But they're already dead. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.